There's a data point inside Uber's recent AI infrastructure reporting that I think deserves its own conversation, because it has implications well beyond Uber. The company has seen AI usage surge nearly tenfold, and I want to be precise here, this is internal AI usage, meaning the models and inference infrastructure that power things like routing, pricing, fraud detection, and driver matching, while AI spending costs have stabilized. Usage up tenfold, costs flat. If that ratio holds broadly across the enterprise AI industry, it changes the investment calculus for AI infrastructure in a significant way.
Let's break down why that ratio is possible, because it's not magic. There are two things happening simultaneously. First, Uber and companies like them are increasingly adopting open-weight models rather than paying for proprietary model APIs at the same rate. Open-weight models, where the weights are publicly released and companies can run them on their own infrastructure, are dramatically cheaper to operate at scale than paying per API call to a model provider. You spend more upfront on hardware, but the marginal cost of each inference drops substantially.
Second, Uber has invested heavily in what they're calling smarter routing infrastructure, which in plain terms means they've gotten much better at deciding which queries actually need a large, expensive model, and which can be handled by a smaller, cheaper one. Not every decision in a rideshare platform requires the same level of AI sophistication. Figuring out whether a driver is likely to cancel a trip in the next 2 minutes might need a fairly simple predictive model. Optimizing dynamic pricing across 40,000 drivers in a city during a stadium event might need something more powerful. Uber has apparently gotten much better at routing workloads to the right model tier.
The signal this sends to the broader market is that we may be moving out of the spend freely on AI and figure out the economics later phase that characterized 2023 through 2025, and into a phase where companies are genuinely disciplined about which AI investments generate measurable returns. That's not a bad thing for the industry, it's actually a sign of maturity. But it does have implications for the AI infrastructure companies, the hyperscalers, the GPU manufacturers, the API providers, who have built their business models around the assumption that enterprise AI spending would grow without constraint.
Investors in NVIDIA, in the hyperscalers, and in companies like Anthropic and OpenAI should be watching the Uber AI cost curve very carefully, because Uber is not a small or unsophisticated customer. If one of the world's most data-intensive consumer technology companies is finding ways to do 10 times the work for the same dollar spend, other large enterprises are going to demand the same efficiency from their AI vendors. The era of just throw it at GPT-4 without thinking about cost per inference is ending.
There's a broader economic principle at work here too. It's essentially the same dynamic we've seen in every technology infrastructure wave. Early adopters overspend because they're exploring what's possible. As best practices emerge and tooling matures, the cost per unit of value drops dramatically. Cloud computing followed this path from 2008 to 2015. Mobile app development followed it from 2010 to 2018. Enterprise AI is following it now, and Uber's tenfold usage-to-cost ratio is one of the clearest data points we have that the maturation is happening faster than most predicted.
And this is where I want to add the curriculum corner context, Marcus, because Uber's AI efficiency story is interesting on its own. But the bigger question is what happens when Uber's AV and AI advantages become so significant that regulators start asking whether the company is using its platform position to foreclose competition. That's exactly the question antitrust law is designed to answer.
Walk us through it, Sarah.
So the starting point for antitrust in the United States is the Sherman Antitrust Act of 1890. Yes, 1890, which means the legal framework for managing the most powerful technology companies of the 21st century was written before the automobile was invented, which is itself a fascinating limitation. Section 1 of the Sherman Act prohibits contracts or conspiracies that unreasonably restrain trade. Section 2 is the one that applies most directly to Uber's situation. It prohibits monopolization, meaning the willful acquisition or maintenance of monopoly power, not just having it. Here's the key distinction that most people get wrong. Having a large market share is not illegal. Dominating a market because you built a better product is not illegal. What Section 2 prohibits is using monopoly power to harm competition through exclusionary conduct. Things like predatory pricing, designed to drive out competitors, or using control of one market to unfairly advantage yourself in another. The classic analogy is a railroad company that owns the only tracks in a region. That company can't charge competing freight companies rates that make it impossible for them to compete while giving its own freight division preferential pricing. Applied to Uber. If Uber becomes the dominant platform for AV deployment globally, the question regulators will eventually ask is whether Uber is using that platform position to disadvantage AV manufacturers who try to run their own direct consumer apps, or to lock in terms that make it economically impossible for competitors to emerge. Market share alone, even 70 or 80% of urban autonomous rides, isn't sufficient for a Sherman Act Section 2 violation. The conduct matters as much as the share. But the bigger Uber gets in AV, the more carefully antitrust lawyers at the DOJ and the European Commission are going to be watching those conduct questions.
That's a really useful frame, Sarah, and it connects to something I want to flag for listeners. The current DOJ antitrust division has shown it's willing to bring cases that would have been considered far-fetched 5 years ago. The Uber of 2026 is not the Uber of 2016. It's a much more politically visible target, and the moment it starts generating the kind of market concentration that the BMO thesis implies, expect regulatory scrutiny to accelerate.